It's great to be joining together as God's people. My name's Brendan, and I'm one of the ministers here at Erwood Anglican. And as we just read, we're looking at what is probably the most famous of all Jesus' miracles, the feeding of the 5,000. And in preparing this sermon, I came across a cartoon about what would happen if Jesus performed this miracle today. And it has Jesus standing there with the crowds around him, being inundated with dozens and dozens of questions like, is the bread gluten-free? Is there a vegan option today available? I'm on a low-carb diet, sorry. Does it contain nuts because I'm anaphylactic? Were the fish farmed humanely? And is this meal gender neutral? Simpler times back in Jesus' day, weren't they? Simpler times. But the question I want to look at today is, why did Jesus do this? Why feed the 5,000? It wasn't because the people were starving to death, okay? We know that. I mean, yes, they're in a desert, but the disciples' plan that we just read to send the people away and go and buy food in the local towns or villages, that's just as plausible an option. Nor does Jesus do it to show his power. You see, if Jesus wanted to show off, he could have made food magically appear all at once, sort of Harry Potter style. You know, Dumbledore just waves his wand and a big feast just appears. Jesus, rather, performs this miracle very quietly. You see, the food multiplies very quietly as the disciples are handing it out. Now, the reason for this miracle is seen in verse 14, if you've got your Bibles open there or your phones on. And this is the theme verse for this passage today. So verse 14, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion. He had compassion. You see, Jesus sees people in need, i.e. they're in a desert with nothing to eat, and he acts to do something about it. But Jesus actually has a second goal in this passage, which is to call his followers to do the same. As we're going to see today, Jesus wants you and me to exhibit the same kind of compassion he does. And the reason we should want this kind of compassion is not just that we get to be like Jesus, our Saviour. It's that compassion makes the church an unstoppable force for good in the world. An unstoppable force for good in this world. You see, one of the biggest persecutors of the early church was the Roman Emperor Julian the Apostate. That was his name. He got that name because he worked like a madman to revitalize his pagan religion whilst stamping out Christianity. So they got the nickname Julian the Apostate. He wrote a letter to a friend, which we still actually have today, or at least a copy of it, outlining why he was failing in this plan. And he says to his friend, "Nothing has contributed to the progress of these Christians as their charity to strangers. The impious Galileans provide not only for their own poor, but for ours as well." So friends, what I'm wondering is the reason the church is waning at present because the church's compassion is waning at present? My hope is that this passage today will speak into that and inspire us to start making the kind of impact Jesus is calling us to make here. And I've got 3 points to do this today, as you can see on your sermon outline. So we're going to begin by looking at not only Jesus' compassion in this passage, but how he wants his disciples to show compassion as well. So I've titled my first point, The Call to Compassion. Yet this call is not easy. And so our other 2 points will be looking at how we can achieve this high calling. So we're going to begin with the qualification of compassion at point 2 and then the fuel for compassion at point 3. But our main goal today is to become the kind of church that Jesus wants us to be. And that is a church that is showing Christ-like compassion in a way that will make us an unstoppable force for good in this world. So let's dive in and look at the call to compassion, the qualification of compassion, and the fuel for compassion. And our passage begins, Matthew 14, verse 13, with these words. When Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. Now, the thing that Jesus just heard about, we were told about back in verses 1 and 2. While Matthew has just told us about John the Baptist's death, he was actually recalling something for us that Jesus knew about a while ago. Okay? So the thing that Jesus has just heard was that Herod was asking questions about him. And Jesus is not ready for that kind of attention yet. So, as we say in Australia, he goes bush. All right? He goes out into the wilderness. The crowds, on the other hand, they're not ready for Jesus to stop paying them attention yet. And so they follow him into the bush. And we read in verse 14, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed their sick. Now, here's our key word for today, compassion. The Greek word, splanchnizomai, actually refers to our guts, right? To our internal organs. See, it means being so moved by the sufferings and misfortunes of another that we feel it in our guts. That we feel it in our guts. Right? So Jesus is so moved by the suffering of these people that he does something about it. He heals their sick. Friends, simply feeling sorry for someone is absolutely useless unless it gets us off our backsides to actually do something to help. But Jesus' compassion doesn't end at healing. So have a look at verse 15. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, this is a remote place. It's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food. Jesus replied, they do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. So these people find themselves in a remote place with no food for the journey home. And again, Jesus' guts are moved. But notice, this time he's calling the disciples to do the same. You give them something to eat. Right, Jesus is teaching his disciples to show compassion for these people just like he shows compassion for these people. He's saying these people have a need and I want you to go out of your way to help meet that need of these people. And friends, this is a trait that is often overlooked in the modern church. Right? Christ-like compassion. Now, you might say to me, well, hang on a minute, Brendan. I show plenty of compassion, thank you very much. I show compassion to my family. I show compassion to my friends. I show compassion to my neighbours and I show compassion to my church. But that's not Christ-like compassion. That's regular compassion. Right? Even the most wicked of pagans still love their families. Okay? Christ-like compassion is our guts being moved by the suffering of strangers. It is jumping into action to help those different to us. So let me ask, do we as a church today have our guts moved by those who are different to us? Right? Are we moved to action when we hear that our government is locking up refugees indefinitely? Are we moved to action when we see that although Aboriginal people make up only 4% of the Australian population, they make up 28% of the adult incarcerated population? And Aboriginals are 6 times more likely to be a victim of violent crime than non-Aboriginal people. Are we moved to action when we see homeless people who are going to be sleeping in 6-degree weather tonight? Are we moved to action when we see Pacific Islanders being displaced from their homes because their islands are sinking due to global warming? Because that's what Christ-like compassion is. Right? It is having our guts so moved by the suffering of those different to us that we do something about it. That's what Jesus is doing here. He's putting out the call for compassion. But, some will say, that's all good and well, Brendan, but what can I do? See, all the examples you just gave, they're impossible, right? The asylum seeker problem, the Aboriginal problem, the homelessness problem, the global warming problem, right? Even if my guts are moved for these people, I'm not qualified to help. Because wiser, richer, and more powerful people than me have been trying to fix these problems for years and decades and centuries, and they haven't been able to yet. They have failed miserably. So if our compassion is waning, Brendan, it's at least in part due to us not being qualified, not being resourced to be able to deal with this problem. And here's the thing. You would be right. We are not qualified. But that's the very issue Jesus is addressing in this passage. Have another look at verse 16 and 17. Jesus replied, "They don't need to go away. You give them something to eat." "We have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, they answered. Now what the disciples are saying is, you're asking the impossible. See, although this miracle is called the feeding of the 5,000, the only reason it's called that is because that's the number that Matthew gives us. But what we learn in verse 21 is there were way more than 5,000 people here. Commentators think that the men who were counted were actually the heads of their households. And so we're talking maybe upward of 15,000 to 20,000 people. Now, when was the last time you fed 15,000 people? I'll tell you, 5 loaves and 2 fish won't even feed my family, let alone 15,000 people. Yet that is what Jesus is asking his disciples to do. And the reason he's asking his disciples to do that is to show them they're not qualified. They don't have what it takes to show the kind of compassion he's asking them to show. And so the first thing, the first important lesson we need to understand is if we as the church want to be an unstoppable force for good in this world, we need to realize that the qualification is knowing we're not qualified. Right? Every single one of those examples I gave are beyond you and me. Add to that the mental health problem, right? Healthcare, aged care, corporate greed, government corruption, gambling addiction, drugs, family violence, even making disciples of all nations. Right? Jesus wants us to know we are not qualified for any of that. So what do we do? Verse 18. "Bring them here to me," Jesus said. Only Jesus is qualified to fix the kind of problems this world is suffering from. But notice how he does it. Verse 19. "And he directed the people to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people." Now notice, it is only as the disciples start to hand the food out that it is multiplied. See, even though the problem of feeding 15,000 people with a few loaves of fish, a few loaves and some fish was beyond the disciples, Jesus still used the disciples to do it. And in the same way, even though the asylum seeker problem, or the Aboriginal problem, or the drug problem, or the making disciples of all nations problem is beyond you and me, God wants to use us to help address it. But he will only do that once we realize we're not qualified. See, God knows we're always going to come up against difficulties when trying to show compassion. The lesson here is to not give up just because there are difficulties. Why? Because the difficulties are the whole point. What do I mean by that? What I mean is, if we could do it in our own strength, then we get all the glory, don't we? See, the difficulties are there to show us we're not qualified. Friends, we need to, only when we know we are inadequate will we actually be adequate. Only when we know it will take a miracle of God to accomplish this will God start to accomplish it through us, just like he did the disciples. But this leaves us with one last enormous problem. And that is, how do we sustain this long term? I mean, if you've, if you're working on a really difficult problem, it takes real grit to keep at it, doesn't it? But what do you do if you're working on an impossible problem? All right? Like, there's a reason we don't see many old social workers these days. It's because it's really hard staying motivated day after day to do a task that is beyond us. So what is our motivation? What is our fuel for showing Christ-like compassion over and over again? Well, one option people employ today is guilt. I don't know if you've come across the phrase, check your privilege. People say, check your privilege. Now, what do they mean? It's a pretty recent phrase. It's used to point out when there are certain things in life that different people groups have to deal with that you and I may not have to. So I'll give you an example. One example of privilege is male privilege. And one of the things that comes with male privilege is that men don't need to worry about whether the outfit they're wearing is sexually provocative or whether it will get unwanted attention. But women worry about that every day. Right? So that's something that males don't need to worry about. It's male privilege. It's a part of male privilege. Another one is white privilege. So I was talking to someone, I can't actually remember who it was, but I was talking to someone a week or two ago, and they were talking, this is an Aboriginal person, and they were talking that about how some of their friends, their Aboriginal friends, when they walk into a department store, they actually get followed around by the security guards. Now, that's never happened to me. So as a white person, I enjoy a particular privilege that Aboriginal people may not get all the time. I.e., I don't get followed by security guards because they think I'm going to steal something. And here's the thing, friends. Understanding our privilege is one of the first steps to showing compassion. There are some people out there that just have it tougher than me because of their gender, their race, or their socioeconomic status. But here's the thing. Some people today like to make privileged people feel guilty about their gender, race, or riches. All right, there are white people on Twitter today apologising for being white. I actually heard a US comedian say that he was lamenting how he had to stop a black man in the street a few weeks previously. He said, look, I'm very sorry for my white privilege, sir, but your headlights are on. Like, it's pretty dumb where it's getting to. Here's the thing. The reason pockets of society are using guilt for their privilege is because guilt works. All right? Guilty people will show compassion for the underprivileged. For a while. For a while. But sooner or later, people get sick of being told how terrible they are. And they will either switch off or they'll just move on to the next thing. See, friends, even though Jesus is commanding his disciples to show compassion here, compassion can never be simply a response to a command. Right? Duty or guilt will only ever get us part of the way there. To be the kind of person who sustains Christ-like compassion, right? If we want to sustain Christ-like compassion long-term, what we need is to understand the depths of compassion that have been shown us. Let me explain what I mean. In Les Mis, it starts with the character Jean Valjean being released from prison for stealing a loaf of bread, believe it or not. He was not qualified to multiply loaves. Yet when he's released, he's repeatedly denied work and lodging because he's an ex-con. That is, until the bishop of, I think I'm pronouncing this right, Digne, takes him in. And that night, he's got his shelter, but what he does is he steals all the silverware and takes off. All the silverware, except for the two special silver candlesticks. He leaves them behind and takes off. Well, he gets caught by the police, and the police drag him back. And he's presented to the bishop, at which point the bishop says he actually gave Valjean the silverware. And in front of the police officer, he goes and gets the two silver candlesticks and he says, "You forgot these." Well, the police officer is satisfied and he leaves. And the bishop actually tells Valjean, "Use that silverware to go and do something worthwhile with your life." Now, at that point, Valjean has some soul-searching to do. He's just blown away by the compassion that has been shown him by the bishop. You see, here's the thing. He didn't deserve to be taken in by the bishop and given food and a warm bed. Yet what he did was he returned that compassion by stealing from the bishop. And when he was caught, rather than have him thrown back in prison, the bishop shows him even more compassion by giving Valjean a chance to do something worthwhile with the silverware. And he does. Like, the rest of the story is about, there's a couple of storylines, but with the Valjean storyline, it is about him dedicating his life to helping others. And the reason he can continue to do that and continue to do that and continue to do that is because he was shown enormous compassion by the bishop. Friends, it is not until we realize that we are Jean Valjean that we will be able to sustain Christ-like compassion. And the reason is this, because if we think that we have done even a bit to earn our salvation, if we think even for a moment that we are better than that person over there and they've done worse things than me, then there is no way we will be able to pour ourselves out for the needs of others. I mean, why should I? I got to where I am off my own bat, thank you very much. But what the gospel of grace says is you and I have all spurned God's compassion. Right? As God was giving us air to breathe, food to eat, clothes, and a shelter over our head, what we did was we decided to steal his silverware. That's what sin is. It is spurning God's honor, disregarding God's honor. Yet even though that's us, God didn't say, "Just take my silverware." He didn't say, "Just take my candlesticks." He said, "Take my life. I give my life to you so that you can do something worthwhile with yours." And friends, when that infinite compassion sinks into the depths of our hearts, it fuels us to turn our churning guts into act after act of personal sacrifice for those who are different to us. Right? Instead of vilifying asylum seekers as queue jumpers, we will write letters to politicians. We will turn up at peaceful protests to advocate for these voiceless victims. Rather than posting a black square on social media, which takes all of 5 seconds, we will actually search out the local Aboriginal community and find out how we might be able to make their lives a little different. Instead of judging the homeless for their poor decisions in life, we might spare a thought that perhaps circumstance had a bigger part to play in their current plight, and we'll stop and offer to buy them a meal or a blanket. If we learn of a case of domestic violence, we will offer the victim accommodation for them to get out. Instead of telling Christians to just snap out of their mental illness, we will sit and listen to them. We will go visit people in hospitals and nursing homes. We will call out greed and corruption when we see it. And of course, our guts will be moved to help people with their biggest problem. by telling them the forgiveness on offer in Jesus Christ. And friends, it's that kind of compassion that will turn the tide for the church. Instead of waning under the persecution we seem to be enjoying in increasing measures these days, Christ-like compassion is what will help the church become a force for good in the world. But friends, even more important to that, Christ-like compassion is the right thing to do. See, when confronted with the infinite compassion that Christ showed us in giving us not just the candlesticks but his very life, that should churn our guts and fuel us to do something worthwhile for those in need.